Blog Talk Radio.
My artistic fervor stems from an overwhelming need to inhabit both this gentle blue planet
Hello and welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me tonight is my last minute, doesn't know he's my last minute co-host, Jeremy Effie, because my regular co-host is not answering his phone and is apparently getting some much-needed sleep, the sleep I should be getting. But with that being said, Jeremy and I, and we wait with bated breath for, you know, Rex's appearance, but it may not happen. We are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight, if you find that tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. Also, make sure to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Herr Jeremy. How's it going?
And I'm sitting here during this whole introduction. I'm working on a buttery voice so I can do a Rex impression, and I'm nowhere close. So I will not insult him with my weak attempt.
Well,
what's he doing sleeping? What's wrong with him?
I know, right? The nerve of that guy. Especially since I did practically an hour and a half of a show by myself yesterday, the nerve of him getting sleep.
That turkey lurkey. Well, I hope he's on the mend. I hope he's not sick. I hope everything's okay.
Right. Yeah, right. Usually, honestly, when the rare times that Rex sleeps through a show, an after midnight show, it tends to be on like a Friday show. And it's because he either doesn't feel good or he's just so extremely exhausted that he needs to catch up on sleep. Plus, there's always a chance that he'll message me on All Poetry and say, "Hey, I'm awake now." you know.
Well, let's hope we have stimulating enough conversation to wake the dragon.
There you go. Maybe if we say his name enough, his dragon
like,
ears will start tingling.
He's like Candyman. He's like Beetlejuice.
say it three times and he'll appear.
Exactly.
So, no, I figured since I saw you called in, I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to bring Jeremy on because, you know what, he can be my co-host for the night if Rex doesn't show up, you know.
Sure, I can fill in the gaps as a weak replacement, but definitely I'm here to enjoy the evening with you.
Great, wonderful. And, you know, just to let everybody know, we'll start out with a little bit of carryovers from Obez Quate. And then we'll move into Hashai, which I'm probably mispronouncing. But anyways, I am going to actually go ahead and bring somebody on so we have a little bit more company. And I'd like to welcome area code 760, which, if I remember right, is Scott. So welcome,
hi,
Scott. Hello. Glad you could join me. Hey.
How are you?
How's
guys
it going?
Tonight?
Oh,
I'm
glad doing
to be
great.
Joining such silky voices. I don't think any of us can make up for Rex, but
exactly. Yeah. No, Scott, I saw you asking for the link for tonight, so I'm glad you're here to join us. It's cool to have you, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always fun to join you guys. So that's what I was hoping to do.
Oh, wonderful! And yeah, I'm glad this contest inspired you, and I'm glad to have you here. You know, so I figure the three of us together almost make one smooth, silky voice. You know? So, question for you, Jeremy. Would you like some practice posting links and assigning readers? Or would you like some practice leading comments? Since, you know, you'll eventually need that.
I don't know that I have my A game, Pam, to post and I don't know that I have my game tonight, to be honest with you. I need to kind of watch and pay close attention tonight.
Sure.
If you need me to do that, I can, but.
I am perfectly capable of doing both. I just figured I'd, offer the opportunity. But, yes, I'm definitely glad to have you here making comments. Okay, so the first poem we're going to start with is actually a carryover from Twisted Tuesdays last Tuesday, where I did the art. Who was that artist's name? I blank out. Oh, the art of Boris Olshansky, and it just so happened that this poem, Daniel Duhame, he listened to the whole show, complimented the show, mentioned he didn't hear his poem, and I was like, I am so sorry. For somehow, I completely forgot to put it on the board. So even though he said it was fine and he had a really great attitude about it, I told him, you know what, I'm going to make sure it gets read on my Friday night poem or a show. So this is Helmold the Magnificent. And Scott, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Helmold the Magnificent by Daniel Duhame. Temple of white alabaster gleaming in the sun, tiered towers reaching towards the sky, two columns of gold stand before the entrance. Walking up the steps, two paneled doors lie open, carved with large dragons. once inside the temple to Helmold, a highly polished marble floor is set before your eyes, and a long corridor lit with torches inside a cage that flicker across the magnificence of the place, leaving weird shadows of light dancing on the walls. At the end lies the altar to Helmold, carved from an expensive marble holding a wonderful gold horn that was made to hold offerings of money, while in his hand held aloft is a sword decorated with griffins and dragons. No finer statue can be found anywhere, carved by a master stonemason and giving three heads instead of one. Pilgrims from all over come to partake in the temple's glory and leave awestruck over its splendor. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Scott. And just an excellent write from Daniel. I have to say that this was not an easy contest to judge, because I felt like so many people were right on the mark for what was in the artwork. A lot of the artwork had to do with Slavic mythology and the ancient pagan Slavic religions. So, you know, but, and Jeremy, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this poem.
Very cool read, Scott. I think you did it justice. I think it was fun to listen to your take on it, and I think your emphasis was well placed in this really cool poem. I think it's hard to keep someone captivated when all you're doing is describing like an edifice, but I think this did it for me. It's not even my taste of architecture, but I was kind of into it in a big way. I think there's that sense of grandeur, and that really is the overall feeling, and there's themes that are hinted upon time and time again that reemphasize all of that underlying, I mean, it says it in the title, the magnificent, but this is that strength and power and dominance. He uses money, and he uses wielding of the sword and the dragons and everything that's otherworldly or mythological to kind of give it this kind of grandiose feel. And what I like is it's a huge setup. And again, I want to again compliment Scott, because I felt that building throughout the entire poem, and I'm like, well, where is the punchline? And sure as heck, it comes at the end. The whole poem is this build of strength and character and dominance and everything I've already described. And then at the end, you finally get a payoff saying, you know what, this is so great that everyone comes and wants to be part of it. And you can take it as a metaphor for a thousand things once that ending comes, right? It could be any kind of dominance or attraction or that feel that anything that is coveted or anything that a lot of care or a lot of money is put towards kind of demands. So dug it. Enjoyed the comment. Great stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And I think grandiose was a perfect word to describe this. And I like how you mentioned that, you know, you're waiting for the punchline and it comes at the end. And you're right, there is that whole idea of that it could be a metaphor for something, you know, that is so beautiful that everyone should want to be part of it. So excellent observations there. And Scott, you did a wonderful job of reading it. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I really love this. I love the imagery of it. You know, I could picture it as I read it. And, you know, oftentimes you're so enthralled in reading something that you have a hard time until like maybe a second or third time through. But I could actually like see it in my mind as I was reading it. I love the walking up the steps, two paneled doors light open, carved with large dragons. We get into a highly polished marble floor, and we're looking down a long corridor with flames casting shadows in a dark hallway onto the walls. And I really love the whole thing. And I really like Jeremy's comment about the idea that it could theoretically be a metaphor for anything in life. I don't think that's necessarily what Daniel intended, but I do see how that could be very much, you know, true, that there's so many things that people make a trek to go see, a pilgrimage of sorts to go experience as something that's spiritual to them. So as always, I tend to like Daniel's writing and stuff, and this certainly is no different. So very good job, Daniel.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the focus on the pilgrimage and the spiritual journey, because that was something I had noticed too. I think this is an epic tale. Even though it's not a particularly long poem, it has an epic feel to it. I did too like the imagery of that flicker across magnificence of the place, leaving weird shadows of light dancing on the walls. It's very epic. It was spiritual in its own way. I did like where he mentioned that he wrote the prompt one after a bit of research. And, because I've always said, I like when people do their research. Either write what you know or do your research. Don't wing it and think you know what you're talking about. That's just me. But I really liked that, it kind of reminded me, even though it's not obviously, not the same style of writing, but there was something in it. I think it was, the way the hall and the dragons and the gold horn that was mentioned, that reminded me very much of Beowulf. It had that feel to it, like the feel of a legend. And I like how this poem stands. What was that?
I just said I agree.
Oh, cool. And, but I like how this poem can stand on its own, but I like how he could take us even further into this mythological adventure. So very well done. All right. And now we are going to go into, we have three carryovers from Bass Quate, which was 2 weeks ago, and let me get this next poem up, and all right, up next we have Drink the Blood by Thomas B. and Jeremy. Will you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. Drink the Blood by Thomas B. The squall preceded the storm. In a dawn shadow, we paint our hopes with the dew. It eases our pain to remain inscrutable, walk the walk of retribution, knowing each footprint is etched in our ancestors' blood. What are you looking at, mister? Our naked souls have been displayed, decried, derided, demeaned, and the sorrow of the whipping post condemned and damned. We rise in this morning, light ready to heal. We recognize we are our savior. We carry our wounds up to the Calvary. Listen to the crowds free the thief. Feel the sun draw back the dew. Steal the sweat from our brow and the terror of judgment. We awaken to the truth. God has not forsaken us. We have walked through the valley of death. We have learned to celebrate life's smallest gifts. Our time shall come and the rivers of blood will be healed. We shall rise from our knees to lead, to create a path in the aftermath. Out to life we have led, others shall learn to how to heal. As we have healed, we are awakened to our own miracle. End poem.
Great read, Jeremy. And this was actually our gold winner in that particular contest. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, I can see why it would have been a gold winner, quite honestly. I love the positivity, the uplifting nature of it towards the people that it is representing and stuff. So there's so many really good lines throughout it, but I really do like the feel of this poem as far as trying to look beyond all of the ills and to heal themselves. So we have walked through the valley of death. We have learned to celebrate life's smallest gifts. Our time shall come and the rivers of blood will be healed. We shall rise from our knees to lead, to create a path in the aftermath. So, yeah, I just love the idea that it's got a positive feel to it. And so very well done.
Absolutely. And you're right. Even though, you know, you can kind of, at least I can see the idea of a downtrodden people, there's a strong sense of hope, of people, you know, realizing their own strength. So I really think you were spot on in your observation of the whole, like the feel, the vibe of the poem. So excellent comment. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you both. I think you nailed it. And especially there's that building nature to all of it, right? And it goes with all the tenets of religion, using all of those hallmarks that we've heard before, like Scott said, Valley of the Shadow of Death, and all of those things that are, you know, it has all those, again, those tenets of religion that are, seem to be almost drilled into our heads. But the line that really kind of, and before I move to the next point, and I like that, again, to reemphasize what you guys have already said, that marching building, triumphant, greater than feel of all of this was truly inspiring. Even if you don't want to go on the religious tip, I think that it still has that kind of inspirational feel to it. But the nugget that I really dug, that stuck out, that I really just dig it, is end of the first, what are you looking at with a space, the question mark, and then mister. That little set of lines early on kind of made me sit up straight and pay attention. You know, when you go on a theme and you stick so true to it as this whole poem does, but you throw a little freaking curveball in the middle, especially early on, for me as a reader, it makes me go, oh, wait a minute, I can't predict what the next line is going to say. This isn't a standard ABBA rhyming poem where I'm going to know what's going to happen. I've got to watch out for something that's going to come at me. And I love that Thomas did that early on for those very reasons, because it made me get into the moment of the greater sense of what he was doing all the more, because, again, it brought me to attention. So I kind of like that little twist.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there. You know, I have to agree, it is really nice when somebody throws in that twist and makes you, as you said, you know, sit up and pay attention. And yeah, there's quite a few, as you mentioned, those, religious connections that the kind of like faith that gives people hope. I particularly like that there were some thoughts that I feel like he turned on their head, like rather than looking for someone else to be their savior, we recognize we are our savior. You know, the idea that, you know, it is us who will help ourselves. And I think that also came through in the end, we are awakened to our own miracle. The idea that miracles oftentimes happen when we put work into making them happen. You know, I think, to me, Thomas has a way, and we've discussed this before on shows that he's called into and written for, is he will often spend hours to days allowing a piece of art to like speak to him and tell him what it has to say. And I really feel like he was in tune with the artwork in this particular one. And I do like how this does have that sense of hope, and it's that sense of hope that comes not only in yourself. So beautifully written and very well done.
So will you say that again? Not from a space, but a space within you. That was really profound. What did you just say?
You
that was really cool, Pam.
Said, it can't be that profound.
No, that was really cool. What a great comment. I like that.
Well,
that was really cool. Right on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah. All right. And up next we have Preoccupation by E.J. Cool. And it goes like this. sun-bleached scraps of blue and green cloth cling to bloat and reconsolidated body parts. Crayfish colonies and luxury apartments cohabitate with tunneling elvers. The rarest of occasions has become a regular occurrence, which might explain the rising frequency of amateur fishermen steeping the riverside with their overpriced tackle and severe ineptitude. Seldom to notice the tangled flotsam and jetsam of human remains sprinkled with dead leaves like macabre confetti, placed neat at rubber-clad feet, begging to be seen. All right, wonderful poem. And Jeremy, let's hear what you dig out of these murky waters.
I'm learning more about EJ and what she puts together, and I'm becoming more and more of a fan the more we're getting exposed to her on these shows. This one is, all right, I'll start with the low-hanging fruit. The easy comment for me to make is I love it when someone sticks to a theme and carries it through. I don't know how to describe it, but the nautical feel of what she does and the simple common theme that she carries throughout gives it that underlying feel, gives cohesiveness to the underlying metaphor and the overall feel of what she's trying to do. Even though that's not the subject, the fact that she keeps doing like the boat and the fisherman and the flotsam and jetsam, I like that. I like that the feel of what she's trying to create is done with this continued metaphor, and I like keep saying the same thing. I like that. The other part that is kind of mixed with is the confetti and the eaches, the little pieces, and that's the broken part piece of this, the shatteredness to the whole poem, and I think that is more of the subtext. And that is the tone that she's going for. And you catch that in sun-bleached scraps, something that's shattered. Where is it in the second? I just saw it. Overpriced tackle is not it, but it was also found in confetti in the third. There's some kind of shattering. That's where I got the heart of the poem, is through that subtext. The fact that the angst that I felt was because of that fracturedness that was carried out through as well. So I think what EJ did, and again with her themes to get that overall feel, is very strong in her right. And I think it matches definitely what we have in that prompt that we have for a picture. Something very hard to capture. Obviously, I'm having a hard time capturing my appreciation in what I'm trying to say, but she did a very good job.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. There was a wonderful consistency with the metaphors. And I have to agree with you, you know, with the consolidated body parts, the macabre confetti, you know, even the flotsam and jetsam really give a dark look at the whole idea of a life, of a sense of humanity that has been shattered. So really, really wonderful catch there with the observation on the chosen imagery. So great comment. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys on a lot of the whole being torn apart, you know, as a society of people, I think, to some degree. And, you know, as always, I just love the depth of EJ's writing. You know, there's so much more beyond the obvious and things like that. You know, I do like the idea of the reconsolidated body parts, crayfish colonies and luxury apartments cohabitate with tunneling elvers. That's some very intriguing lines there. I love the idea of the fishermen steeping the riverside with overpriced tackle and severe ineptitude. As I picture the body parts that she's referring to floating by them in this river that appears to be like the rarest of occasions that's occurring on a regular basis. And, you know, I just picture that as kind of in some way, shape, or form referring to kind of the atrocities of life that we see on a regular basis that seem to float by our feet on a regular basis. So I just think you could go in so many different directions. I'm sure that EJ has one vision in her mind, but the way that it's written allows a variety of avenues in the mind of the reader, and I love that kind of poetry. So with that being said, as always, an amazing poem by E.J. Cool.
And there's a lot to be said. Can I jump in for a second?
No, sorry. Please.
And I think there's a lot to be said for that, Scott. I think it's a great point. I think when a poet lets the mind go off and do their own kind of analysis to their own degree, it's not that EJ is being nebulous here or being vague in what she's trying to do, but I think you could take all of what she's going for and the feel and assign it to your own part of life. So I think the comment that you just made, where the reader can take it and interpret it and assign it to their own interpretation, really kind of gives them ownership to a degree, right? It kind of makes them be part of the poem. So I think that was a really cool comment.
Oh, I agree. Definitely. Well, you know, kind of to semi-quote my sleeping co-host, as Rex always says, you know, you may have a specific idea of what your poem is about, but once you put it out there, it's open to interpretation. You know, because somebody might see something in your poem that you didn't see, you know, so. But I'll probably at least a couple more times during the show make a jab at my sleeping co-host. So everybody knows.
But, and you know,
are you going to defend Rex or do I need to?
You need to defend him. I'm not going to defend him. I'll throw him under the bus any chance I can get. But to that point, Pam, I mean, there is no worse, I don't know if it's ever happened to you guys, but there is no worse feeling in the world when you write a poem and you put it on AP and then all of a sudden someone interprets it a way that is totally, I've had it where it's been totally offensive to someone or something, my lines get totally misconstrued or the whole point, and I see where the reader is coming from on how they could see that there's some kind of interpretation that is totally not meant for what happened or what I said.
You know, I will say that the in that third stanza, Jeremy, on that, relative to how I saw it, partially was too with the human remains and then sprinkled with dead leaves and place meat at a rubber-clad feet begging to be seen. You know, so, you know, I just think there's so many ways you could actually go with it because it's not just laid out for you. It does leave something to your interpretation. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it is a layered piece. I did like, Scott, that you brought up the part about the overpriced tackle and severe ineptitude. And because when you brought that part up, I thought, you know, that really does seem to me to be an important part of the poem, because to me it really speaks on the idea of people who think they know how to help people who are in a situation they're not, and they don't because they haven't experienced. They're trying to solve, you know, the problems of poverty and are completely out of their own realm of thinking. I really liked how visceral the imagery was in this, you know, and I think, to me, it kind of speaks on like a city or an environment and where, you know, the leaders, the politicians are trying to solve problems, small problems, when there's bigger problems going on. I admit, while you guys were commenting, I was Googling, you know, what do crayfish eat? Because, you know, what's that?
I know you can feed them liver, because I used to, as a kid, actually fish for them in a camp called what was it, summer fun day camp or something. They used to give us liver, and we would fish for crayfish.
Oh, wow.
And get them. Yeah.
Yep.
But
yep.
What
just
it, what
saving
it
all omnivores. That they tend to eat a lot of dead, like, protein matter or vegetation. I think they're, a lot of times, they're, like, almost like cleaners. But, you know, I felt like if I could just, and I still don't have it 100% figured out, but I thought if I could find out what crayfish eat, maybe perhaps that would show me a deeper connection. Because there, you know how sometimes you feel like you know there's something deep going on, but you just can't 100% get it unless you do some research? That's how I felt about reconciliated body parts, crayfish colonies in luxury apartments, cohabitate with tunneling elvers. You know, just really intriguing imagery and a powerful rite all the way through. And yeah,
mm-hmm.
So very well done. Now, I have to ask you, Scott, do crayfish taste like shrimp? Do they taste like lobster? Like, what exactly do they taste like?
I never ate them.
We
were kids, and they literally gave us string, and I can't tell you what kind of liver it was, but we would tie the liver with the string, and we would literally dip that in, and before you knew it, they were all over it. So.
It was the liver of the human remains sprinkled with dead leaves.
Maybe.
No.
We
actually, when I was a kid and I lived in the middle of the woods in Wisconsin, we actually had the same things, only we called them crawdads. And
yeah, that's what we call them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's more, I don't know, certain areas call them different things, but we lived at the top of the hill. On the bottom of the hill, there were two lakes, and then between the two lakes was a stream, and the crawdads would be in the stream, and we never fished for them. We used to have this game that we played where if a crawdad started coming towards us, we ran down the stream as fast as we could, which was ridiculous because there wasn't like you were going to catch us. Anyway.
And you know what's weird? And since we're talking about this line so much, you know, to catch them, because I remember catching them, we called them crawdads too. I grew up on the East Coast in Virginia, and we called them the same thing. But what you would do is you would put the cup behind them, and you would just splash the water a little bit, and they shoot backwards. So when I read this line again, the reconsolidated body parts, crayfish colonies and luxury apartments, that's more of the rich kind of recoiling back from the dregs of society is how I read all of that. Cohabitate with tunneling elvers. They're kind of recoiling and kind of compartmentalizing themselves in their own different, you know, other than world than what most of us seem to experience. So, I mean, it's really cool that we're having this much conversation over these little couple lines that EJ put together. But, yeah, no, I love what you guys are offering for that.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that was a really great observation, Jeremy. And yeah, you know, sometimes I know, you know, there are very rarely, I know there are occasionally people who want us to just read poetry. But, you know, sometimes when you take time to really have in-depth conversations about a poem, you can unveil things that you didn't see before. So
yeah, peel back the layers of it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, Scott. And all right. And up next, we have The Mississippi by Kenny W. And Scott, would you give that, Fish in the Mississippi by Kenny W. And would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Fish in the Mississippi by Kenny W. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, some kind of sturgeon on the end of my pole, over 25 species, you know, here on the lower river. Best gut and hang him on the wash line. Chuck him back? Never. A people's gotta eat. One Mississippi, two Mississippi. It's graffiti written over and over on the wall, like down in the trim, New Orleans. There's so much jazz and voodoo now. My palette is multicolored. There's an oil slick on the canvas, a halo on my brow. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, 20 more fish upstream. I'm like a robot catching them, like that upstate yogi bear snaffling salmon. It's a self-portrait, man. Jim Michael, rainbow fishing. One for me, one for my missus, one for my family, these fruits of the Mississippi. Yeah, I'm not sure. I believe that that's it, Paul. I don't know. Is it? Did the artist miss the Mississippi? The studio in New York kind of makes you want to cry. Much too young to die. I'm not sure if that's in poem or I include those four lines there.
Well, so. I think it, you know what? I have to say I'm not 100% for sure, but I feel like it was a good call to read those four lines. You know, because even though they don't, they're an offshoot of the rest of the poem, I think they make a really important point. You know, so great read there. And, yeah, I have to say I really liked this poem. First of all, I like that he took a familiar, like almost childlike phrase, you know, count, like how you'd count one Mississippi, two Mississippi, and added it to the beginning of each stanza. You know, I really felt like this was a wonderful tribute to the artist. I liked how it had a jazzy beat. You know, to me, it took a raw, honest look at a life that, you know, it was full of art, full of dance and music and a connection with new. You know, I really like that he wrote this, you know, almost as if it was told from the point of view of the artist. You know, I really particularly was drawn to one Mississippi, two Mississippi, it's graffiti written over and over on the wall, like down in the Treme, New Orleans, there's so much jazz and voodoo now, my palette is multicolored, there's an oil slick on the canvas, a halo on my brow, you know, and you know, that was a wonderful description of the painting itself, but I think it's also a wonderful description on the presentation of the artist and the, you know, shoot, I hate when a word slips away from my brain, but, you know, I have to say, that I will say those last four lines actually, you know, bring tears to my eyes, you know, that this talented artist who was speaking for the troubles that people were going through, that he knew, the cities, the youth that struggled, you know, that he died of a heroin overdose at 27. And that there's so much emotional impact and sadness within those last four lines, and especially when Kenny says, kind of makes you want to cry, much too young to die. I also like, and Kenny tends to do this, is he'll have a poem that makes a serious point, but he'll also throw in something that really makes you smile. Like that upstate yogi bear snaffling salmon. I mean, what a line to throw. You know, here we are talking about an artist who died, talking about a people who need food because they're starving and it can't be wasted. And then all of a sudden we have an upstate yogi bear snaffling salmon. And I think that is so attention-grabbing and so clever. So I thought this was very well done. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that you gave some really awesome comments there. The third stanza, I agree that Yogi Bear snaffling salmon, that was really great. you know, I kind of feel bad because I feel as if I did kind of slaughter the end of his poem when I was reading it. And it's such an amazing poem all the way through those first three stanzas. And, you know, it has that real Mississippi feel, the colloquial language, the vibe that just, you know, makes you feel like you're there with them and stuff, and like you're being told a story by somebody who, you know, just enthralls you. And so, yeah, I really love the whole poem. It's really well done. And, you know, I love even the ending of that third stanza. It's a self-portrait, man, John Michael, rainbow fishing, one for me, one for my missus, one for my family, these fruits of the Mississippi. So just an amazing poem. I really like the whole vibe of it. So,
oh, it
so if
really
I
is.
Your poem, I'm sorry, Kenny.
Well, you know, when you have to make a split-second decision, I mean, we've all done that before. I've had times where people, you know, put, like, right at the bottom of their poem, what prompt inspired them, I read that. You know, well, like, I actually used to be a telemarketer, and when you're a telemarketer and you get the computer in front of you and the name pops up and you're like, hello, may I speak to you? And you have a split second, like, you know, to say the person's name, you know. And, like, sometimes people would have their business names. Like, there was one time I was like, hello, may I please speak to Big Mama's Tortillas? And I was like, right after I said it, I was like, you know damn well that's not the person's name. But, yeah, no, I thought you did a great read and wonderful observations on the poem. And Jeremy, let's hear your thoughts.
You know I'm going to use that Big Mama of a Tortilla story in the future, right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
And no, Scott, you didn't slaughter it. I mean, I think it's a note to Kenny to kind of, there's beauty in that. The fact that you were taken aback so much by the first three that you took that pause. And yeah, the next chapter, that fourth, is a definite phase shift in the poem. And it's more of a commentary. And so the fact that you were drawn to pause after that way, I think that kind of says a lot for what Kenny created. Because of that different voice, that different narrative between the first three and the fourth. So I don't know. I dig the fact that happened, to be honest with you. And what you were saying earlier, Pam, about this, it's about the author, right? It's a biographical story of the author. And what's really cool about this is when you say one Mississippi, two Mississippi, you're counting down in anticipation of something to happen. So for me, in reading this poem, it was a biographical story of this troubled artist, his life, right? He's waiting for that moment to be, you can interpret it as being discovered as an artist for what his craft was, or he was counting down to his inevitable death at 27 years old. And all the while, the focus is still on the grind of life, eating sturgeon, eating bottom feeders, worried about where the next meal is going to come from, when the rest of the world is doing something much more jazz and voodoo and multicolored. He's doing the grind when there is that countdown to something that is inevitable, that is coming. So that's how I read it as more of a biographical piece. And very, very cool, very, very well done.
I like that. I like that you mentioned that it's an autobiographical piece and the idea of the one Mississippi, two Mississippi, being the countdown to the inevitable. I thought that was a wonderful observation. And you're right, it is the inevitable. So very well said. And all right, so now we are actually going into the rites inspired by Sam. Okay, let me get this full name here. The artist, Taishing Sam Hishai, who is a performance artist, mainly in the 80s. He was actually suggested me as a topic by Dexter Bailey. So thank you, Dexter, for that. You know, and I couldn't pass it up Because to be honest with you, to be perfectly honest, Foreman's art, I like occasionally using it as a break on through because it's one of those kinds of art forms that I struggle with. I struggle to see the art in performance art. But that doesn't mean it doesn't exist or that, you know, it can't. You know, I feel like performance art is one of those that you can disagree with and still find inspiration from. Sam was particularly well known for his one-year performances. He really didn't do a whole lot of pieces his whole life because most of them took a year to perform. And so, you know, as we go through the poetry and we see what people wrote to, we'll probably end up discussing a little more the individual pieces. But, you know, I just wanted to share my thoughts and, you know, let people know that what we'll be getting into next. How about, just out of curiosity, do either of you have any opinions about performance art?
No, I don't have an opinion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, like I said, it fascinates me, that's for sure. And I think it's a perfect kind of prompt for a break-on-through show. So, all right, and let's see what we got next. And, all right, up next we have Reel It In, Reel It Out by Time Teller. And Jeremy, will you do that already for us, please?
Absolutely. Reel It In, Reel It Out by Time Teller. Rope burns, striped skin as we navigate between each other, anchored icebergs with more below than above, refusal to allow growth without the chains and tethering of the torture cell. They play cruel and call it harsh whipping the treetops with cold, controlling winds. A rope latches from childhood, swinging the dead body all the way up a mountain. Field gates close. The avenues are trafficked by police. We pull and tug the rope, fearing the other might let go all this time together. They turn and twist us, raveling the rope into knots, shortening the distance, opening the wounds of yesterday. Can they close them? Or do we lose one another, cutting the tether, watching the stallion run out into the road, causing chaos? Sometimes I dream of pulling the rope up a mountain only to find nothing on its end. You were lost years ago down a ravine or carried like a cairn away, far away. They rally together, tea parties, cathedrals, local big fish, all their tethers and strings, the web of control and prevention, all their mind games and ego bashing, all the romanticized ideas of making it right, their games of sowing the seed. How this rope frays and unravels, how this rope they forgot to burn its ends, how this rope dangles the untamed before the masters who in all their nothing egos believe they came to tame. The pendulum of swing between these two ends of rope. Hey there, I call to the thing I left behind. Cut yourself free and rebirth. Leave me to continue. I have dragged you from childhood. I have never cared. Until they search to find you and pull you up closer where I am forced to face you and pull.
Wonderful read there, Jeremy. And really a thought-provoking write by Time Teller. And he didn't put the, you know, prompt in his AN. Though obviously with so much reference to a rope, he wrote to the prompt rope piece, which was when Sam had himself tied by a short rope to a fellow performance artist, and I can't remember her name, but they were tied to get connected by this rope for a full year. And M. Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a really great write. I just love so much of it. The images that are created here are really powerful. Some time ago I had read it, so I'm kind of reading my own notes a little bit. So I definitely enjoyed many of the images and the flow with it, words. Some really great stanzas. The first two are a great example. Rope burns straight, skin as we navigate between each other. Anchored icebergs with more below than above, which, you know, probably speaks of almost anyone. Refusal to allow growth without the chains and tethering of the tortured self. Kind of agree with your assessment of the attachment of the rope and the chains and that stuff that you were just talking about there. They play cool and call it harsh whipping the treetops with the cold controlling winds. I really like that line as well. In the end, I just love the attachment part of the whole thing where you pull up, you know, one line within it where it's talking about sometimes I dream of pulling the rope up a mountain only to find nothing on its end. You were lost years ago down a ravine or carried like carry on away, far away and stuff. And then in the end, though, until they search to find you and pull you up closer where I'm forced to face you. So in some way, shape, or form, forced to face the issues or the situations in life that may exist. The whole poem, though, has just got a lot of really cool images. The way that the poet chose to respond to the prompt was really cool. So, good job, Kelly.
It really, yeah. Yeah, I have to agree with you. There are a lot of really cool images. And, yeah, I like how you made the observation about how, you know, I'm forced to face you, forced to face, you know, a situation that can oftentimes be difficult to face. So excellent comment there. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really keyed in on the social commentary of this. It hit me smack dab in the middle. They all rally together, tea parties, cathedrals, local big fish, all their tethers and strings, the web of control and prevention. It's that tug of trying to keep up with something that's unattainable. And then it continues with their games of sowing the seed. There were a couple romanticized tugs as well, but it was much more the class struggle that I felt was really dragging on this one. And I liked the title was not only being dragged along by this rope that was burning, there was also some reeling out. So you're reeling in, you're trying to catch up, you're feeling the burn, you're getting all of the physical marring of trying to keep up with the rat race, but you're also reeling it out too, which kind of is a nod to the fact that maybe you're not at the bottom. You're part of the ladder of all of this as well. And the tug of rope, I mean, we could assign it to 1,000 things. I like the fact that even if I'm 100% off on what my take is on this, you can assign this metaphor, this tug, this struggle, this performance art that inspired this piece on so many different metaphorical levels. And I know it's a conversation that we already had earlier tonight, but I think this one reemphasized that feeling that the overall emotional takeaway that I had from this is definitely real, and that's what's most memorable. So I think Time Telly did a great job.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. The metaphor of the tugging rope or even the using the rope as a metaphor itself really can have multiple layers to it. And, yeah, there is that whole idea. You know, I like how you brought up that idea of realizing that you're part of the problem. You know, I guess for me, and I can't help it, I think of, you know, a tug on a rope or being tied to someone. You know, I think of the umbilical cord, you know, and to me, there's almost this idea of people of a generation so spoiled that they don't know how to go out into adulthood. You know, and maybe that's not there at all, but, and, you know, maybe that's just how your mind is, you know.
that's really cool, Pam. That's a really cool thought.
Thank you. Thank you. But, yeah, this is brilliant imagery. And I love the questions. Can they close them, or do we lose one another cutting the tether, watching the stallion run out onto the road causing chaos? You know, like, I don't know. It's like the whole idea, I think, to the idea in that section of, you know, there's strength in numbers, but there's also times where we have to let go. So wonderful imagery and metaphors, and very well done. And all right, let's see what we got next. All right, all right, up next we have 1 Year at a Time by Darkened Auras. And it goes like this. 1 year to some, it may seem like an eternity, but to me it's a small fragment of life. Let me try to make you see how my 1 year doing something might be a lifetime for others. 1 year in a jail cell, after all, I am here illegally. I'll serve my time for such a silly crime. No reading, writing, talking. I'll be out of here after 1 year. Well, this may be someone's life. 1 year punching a time card every hour on the hour. It's me. It's like I have been working. No time for sleep or shower. You see, I have a job, America. I can work for you. Don't see me as an outsider. You know mentally what this could do. 1 year living on the street, not allowed to wash myself, can't enter any building, just a sleeping bag to my name to protect from the elements. There is life for many homeless folks that have my sentiments. 1 year beyond to a partner, bound to a partner by a rope, 8 feet in length, couldn't even touch them. COVID give me strength, stay 6 feet apart, they say. Could you imagine this play out now? The world's so overcrowded, tied together without touching for a whole year. Just how? 1 year throwing my passion away, no art to do or see, can't even talk about it, come to destroy me. 5 years, teachers always ask, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Well, I've been caged, staged my wage, lived estranged, been chain arranged, and gave up all that made me happy. Then secretly for 1 year I made the art that gave me cheer, but these were only for my eyes. Why would I not advertise? I'll leave that to you to analyze. And poem. Oh, and I apologize for some of the parts that I stumbled over. But what a wonderful light by Darkened Auras. And Jeremy, your thoughts.
Oh, Pam, you did a great job of reading that. There are no problems at all. You know what's funny on this one is, in the beginning, I thought it was going to be more braggadocious, right? I thought it was like 1 year of my life. Look what I've done in 1 year compared to what you guys couldn't even do in a lifetime is where I was going in my head. And then every stanza was something that was beaten down, obviously. You don't want to be in a jail cell. You don't want to be in a job that you hate. You don't want to be living on the streets. So I kind of like that surprising factor of all of this, that 1 year becomes much more pronounced or punctuated when it's something that is unpleasant as opposed to something that's pleasant. I don't know. I thought that was an interesting spin right out of the gate that I didn't see coming. When you were reading it, Pam, what was really cool there at the end is how it picked up. That final stanza, there's a lot more poetic device used, and you feel that ending pounding message coming through just out of what they did with the rhyme scheme. And it was an interesting mix. I like it when a poem changes gears, and I think you did a wonderful job of presenting or performing the poem, because I felt it in your voice and when you hit that final stanza because of that poetic device. Overall, I think what Darkened Auras did here was very apropos to the performance art of the two people being tied together and how they carried this and the overall message of what that psychologically could feel like. And then tying it to modern day, and you talk about COVID and all the things that we've all gone through with some very tumultuous years recently in the past, I think that connection made me understand the emphasis of this poem all the more. So great job.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Now, I have to agree with you, that emphasis and the thoughts of, could you imagine if this was done, nowadays, was a really important part of the poem. So great comment there. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like this poem in its entirety as well. I agree with you, Jeremy. The way it started off, you know, you can kind of get one sense of it, and then it kind of walks us through so many of the pitfalls or downfalls of life today and makes you kind of consider the life of other people and 1 year in their shoes and everything. And then I, too, really love the way that the ending comes along and it kind of has a power punch. And I do really like the ending line of, I'll leave that to you to analyze. Why would, you know, he not advertise and stuff, the whole concept of what he's done. And so, yeah, I think it's really a powerful thing, that last stanza, 5 years, teachers always ask, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Well, I've been caged, staged by my wage, lived in estranged, been chain arranged, and gave up all that made me happy. And secretly for 1 year, I made the art that gave me cheer. But these were only for my eyes. Why would I not advertise? I'll leave that for you to analyze. I think it's just really powerful because, you know, literally to a large degree, all that this artist did was for himself. So anyways, yeah, I just think it's a really great job of responding to the prompt by Dark and Doris.
Oh, I have to agree. Yeah, and she did put the one of the quotes up on top. 1 year to me is just a small section of life. For most humans, 1 year is a long time. So much happens. But for the universe, it's very temporary. And I like how she used that quote as inspiration, but she actually went through all but nearly all of his art pieces. His first art piece, like, barely counts. Like, I put it up there, but it was when he was first getting into performance art, and he hadn't established the 1 year yet. So his first performance piece was actually jumping out of a tall, like, you know, I can't remember the mouse story, like 2 or 3 story building onto the sidewalk, and he broke both his ankles. Did not make a big impression, so, other than with his ankles, you know, so, but, yeah, she takes us through, like, his time, where he puts himself in a cage, the rope, the timepiece, even the pieces where he goes for 1 year without doing any art or even talking about art, and the 1 year where, you know, he does art but doesn't bring it out. And I agree with both of you, that ending is extremely powerful. I thought this was a wonderful nod to the artist, and I like that he, Darkened Ores, asks that question in the voice of the artist and says, I'll leave that to you to analyze. You know, and I think that brings us back to, as we're talking before, you know, like when you put your poetry out there and people analyze it, you know, you got to be willing to hear other people's interpretations of your artwork. Another part that really stuck out to me is when she mentions the 1 year living on the streets and not allowed to wash myself, can't enter any buildings. And then at the end of that, she says, this is life for many homeless folks. They have my sentiments, you know, and here I thought, well, what a wonderful way to connect with those who are suffering on the street, and to really become in tune with their needs. This is an excellent rite by Dark Indoors, and very well done.
I'm willing to tie myself to Rex. I want more than 8 feet of rope, but I'll do a good dozen feet of rope for a year if that means that I'll get him to show up for the shows and he's going to cook for me.
I think that sounds like a good deal. Yeah.
As long as we call it artwork and I get him, I'm willing to take one for the team. Just put that down in the books, please.
All right, I'm writing it down. If he ends up eating up any of those moldy carcasses and letting out those big dragon farts, you might want a little extra rope.
That's right. That's why I said more than exactly.
Yep. All right, and Scott, I've got your poem up. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
All right. I'm sorry Rex can't be here for it. All right, here we go. Break on Through by me, Scott Sharp. The water level of my poetry, my life, are the same. Head first, I dive into the baby pool, splitting my brain for you. A semi-conscious thought dribbles out from half-submerged upon the page, rippled by the waves I've created, to attention ready to act, looking fine in those skin-tight red swimsuits. Unconscious, I float above them and just happen to have time to notice. They run in unison and slow motion across the beach, the sands of poetry, pulling words from my stanzas, drowning victims from the treacherous seas. David Hasselhoff, Pamela Anderson, no. But Pam Rand and Timidus Rex, listen, ride the waves of my poetry, crashing upon the ears of insanity. Drowning, I fear the tsunami I have created, until Rex in his intellectual and analytical way explains, Scott, you're standing in just inches of water. Pam responds, but it's very nicely done.
Oh, that is wonderful. I got to clap for that. Okay, here's me clapping. Yay! All right. Oh, so I really enjoyed and appreciated this. I liked your title. You know, I can actually, and since, you know, my name is in here, Jeremy, I'm just going to elbow you to the side and make the first comment. I'm going to make sure, Scott, that Rex listens to this and that he leaves you a comment. It is relatable. You know, it's got wonderful humor in it. You know, I love the nod to the show, I just don't know how you found out that Rex looks like David Hasselhoff and I look like Pamela Anderson. I mean, geez. No, but I love the humor in it, but I also like that it's relatable because, you know, like my old poem I had read on the earlier show, you know, to me, practically every new person, I mean, there is the exception. There are these so-called professional poets who come on and they're like, I know exactly what I'm doing, you know, but most of us feel like we're drowning, you know. And, you know, I really love the tribute to late night poets, lifeguards at late night poets jump to attention, ready to act. I love the humor and the image of the David Hasselhoff and Pamela Anderson run from Baywatch. And you really did capture our personalities. You know, the whole analytical and intellectual observations that Rex makes and, you know, me tending to be, well, I don't want to say a cheerleader because I'd like to think I'd say more than rah, 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 sis, boom, bah. I could be wrong. But anyways, no, this made me laugh. It made me clap. And I really appreciate how you spoke for, to me, you spoke for everyone that struggles to find their footing in such a large site as All Poetry and find their individual voice. So, you know, very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I saw this when you posted, buddy, and it made me giggle. I especially like the very last line when you hit, you nail Pam with, but it's very nicely done. That was great. There's a lot to this. I think it's deep. The comedic value of all of it, the tribute to the site, the tribute to the show, all are spot on. I love all of that. But I think you went, especially in revisiting it here a week later, 2 weeks later, there's some deeper stuff that I really kind of enjoyed with this, especially after hearing Pam's comment as well, saying that we all try to struggle to find our footing in this site, or even as performing or developing our own craft through poetry. And that was one of the subtexts that I felt was the struggle of going through the art, right, of creating a poem, the process is what I'm trying to say. That's felt in this. It's a struggle, and there are times when I just beat my head against the wall, I refuse to give up on a poem, and it's a fight, as opposed to letting those beautiful ones that just kind of flow out in 10 minutes that seem to all fall together. There's a lot of self-doubt, and there's always that shallow end of the pool where you're not sure that what you're doing is going to be accepted or is even what you want to convey or even has value. And I think that you do it again through a comedic value, and it's hard. I always like comedy that is self-deprecating because there's a lot of strength in that, right? It's hard to make fun of oneself, and you do that in this poem. But there's also the fact that there's that struggle in that deprecation is the word I'm trying to get out, because it is. To create something beautiful, you have to look at yourself and you have to accept it and point out the flaws and then be willing to show those flaws and stick with them. So a lot of that is captured right out of the jump, and I didn't even catch it until we did it again tonight. The water level of my poetry, my life, are the same. That's a really cool, profound line for what you created here at the end. And then the fact that it's all with humor, it's all inclusive, and you have all of the other themes, I think makes this a deeper poem than what I realized the first time when I read it a couple days ago. So bravo to you, brother.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. Yeah, I was
Was there anything you wanted to say about your poem?
I really enjoyed writing it. I definitely was smiling throughout writing it, which, you know, I love when writing is what it should be, which is enjoyable and stuff. But, you know, I love the quote of the artist himself about the water level of my life and art need to be the same. And, you know, us as poets and everything, our art is poetry. And so immediately those first lines came to mind, and then it became comedic value because to me it was like, okay, this is going to be humorous. This isn't going to be deep and stuff. And so anyways, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, as I advanced through it and the Baywatch thing came in and the skin-tight red swimsuits and stuff, you know, I definitely had an enjoyable time writing it. So anyways, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Hopefully Rex will enjoy it as well.
You know what? I have no doubt that if he was here, he would very much enjoy it. And I will mention to him that he should definitely listen. Because, yeah, I can even, in my head, I'm already imagining, like, Rex's deep chuckle that he does. And then I can imagine him commenting on this, you know. So I am really quite certain he will enjoy it. So. All right.
Yeah, I would have loved to have heard him comment on it, but that's okay.
But sometimes I guess people just need to get their sleep. But all right. So
moving onward.
That's right. Up next we have Level by Weaver of Dreams, and we have a SoundCloud for that. So Let me find that. Here we go.
My artistic fervor stems from an overwhelming need to inhabit both this gentle blue planet and my crimson muse in only a second's blink of an eye. On a calm lake or a choppy sea, I slip, slide, and segue with ease. Lights, shades, touch, tastes, nuance. Use them, don't overthink them. I see and feel things you don't. Is this a gift or a curse? I type that final word, and after a day, I go back. What was life affirming, a weather vane pointing me straight into the wind, is now banal, trite, heavy with despair. I don't delete. Instead, I exaggerate, only to find with rested eyes, less was decidedly more.
Wonderful read and write there, Weaver. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Scott, let's start with your thoughts.
Yeah, I really love the way Weaver writes and reads her own poetry and stuff, so I'll start with that. But I love the whole idea. It appears to me she is writing about basically the same idea that I am, the water level and the art and stuff. And then she's comparing the two to, you know, being like the muse. My artistic fervor stems from an overwhelming need to inhabit both this gentle blue planet and my crimson muse in only a second's blink of an eye. And then she turns on to the idea of poetry and writing it. And, you know, I love the way that she talks about it. I slip, slide, and segue with ease. Light, shade, touch, taste, nuance. Use them, don't overthink them. And then I kind of love the whole concept of, you know, the second guessing. It's kind of like Jeremy was saying relative to my poem and everything. You know, I just think that's part of writing poetry, is the second guessing yourself. You come back and, you know, a day or two later, you know, myself, that's kind of my thing. I prefer to kind of let it sit a day or two because I don't want to make rash decisions about it. And, you know, and the idea of less is decidedly more, I think that oftentimes that's very true. So overall, it's another really amazing job done by Weaver of Dreams. And as always, just a really enjoyable read.
Absolutely. Great observations there. Yeah, and I too really liked that part where she says, I slip, slide, and seg with ease, light, shade, touch, taste, nuance. Use them, don't overthink them. You know, I've come to learn over the years that people have a lot of different ways of writing poetry. You know, some people, like, as you said, they'll, you know, you let it sit for days and think about it carefully, and others will just, you know, and there's no wrong or right. It's whatever works for you, you know. So, but I like the alliteration in those lines, and I like how she attributes movement to the sense of, you know, the sense of movement to the art of writing poetry. So a really great comment there, Scott. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I've never really thought of it this way. And I think it's cool on how she expressed it, in the fact that the physical world with your five senses is one way of living life, and then the other part is your imagination, right? When you let yourself pay attention to your muse, and you don't pay attention to your five senses, but you let your brain or your creativeness take over your reality. And that only is in the blink of an eye. When you're not paying attention to your five senses and you release yourself to the creative aspect of your life. And it's really cool because then that's revisited there at the end when less is more. So it's saying to go and be and live in that imaginary world, that imaginary state of being, that creative state of being, has its own merit on its own. And when you take that separate from, again, what I'm saying, when you take it separate from the sensory part of life, and you want to live in that Alice in Wonderland, Mad Hatter's world of creativeness and dream and all of the fun things, all of the deep desserts of life, that's more. So I think it's cool. I think it's cool to kind of separate them because I've never really thought of life that way. And then when, like what you guys said, and then taking this all in terms of the greater scheme, the more literal view of what this poem is, the process of writing, I think it all ties together. So, yeah, no, I'm sorry if I'm rambling, but I like what Weaver kind of inspired me on this kind of cool line of thought that I'd never visited before.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And you're right, it does kind of have that whole, like, going into that Alice in Wonderland type feel. You know, and no, I absolutely enjoy babbling. You know, I really, but I really do enjoy how she mentions, like at the end, I don't delete, instead, I exaggerate, only defying with rest eyes, less was decidedly more. You know, so I don't know. I just really like how, like, it can be about that process of writing, and or it can be about that process of dreaming. And I like how there is that lesson learned. Like, oftentimes, I think we do try to be showy with our words and with our newfound capabilities. Then we learn, you know, that you know, we learn that how to when necessary trim up our poetry, you know, or, and so just very well done. And all right, I'm gonna put up the next poem, which will be another SoundCloud. And all right, up next we have Sam by Orenz. And let's see, we do have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
Sam by Orenz. I am art, he said, alone and tethered. I am both bird and cage, for those who only know one or the other. I am art, he wrote. I am as mute as a painting, as blind as marble eyes. I only reflect the cracks in the mirror. I am art, he screamed. I don't exist without you. I eat and drink from your hand. I am without a shape until you turn on the light. I am art, he whispered. I am a handful of seconds in the Big Bang, burning time until you give me my immortality. End poem.
Wonderful read and write, Orenz. I'm so glad she was inspired. She's wonderful, emotive poetry, and a beautiful reading voice. I really appreciate that recording. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I really love the sound of the way she read the poem. Very powerful. I love that each stanza starts off with "I am art," because really, the way she writes it, you see the art in what he does. And then, you know, I really love the ideas that she creates within the poem and kind of shines the light on the concept of, you know, art is nothing without the audience. So without an audience, there is no such thing as art, you know. And so I love that she kind of highlights that throughout this. I think it's really well done the way she does it. I am as mute as a painting, as blind as marble eyes. I only reflect the cracks in the mirror. Those are awesome lines. But, you know, going into the next stanza, I am art, he screamed. I don't exist without you. I eat and drink from your hand. I am without a shape until you turn on the light. You know, and it's just so true, you know, about art in general. And so, yeah, I just think it's a really powerful write. And, you know, who knows, maybe Orentz's poem will find immortality. So, very good job.
I like to think that. I like to think that there's many poets on this study, on All Poetry, that are going to find immortality through their poetry. And you're right, this is a powerful write. You know, I love the repetitiveness of I am art, but that stanza that you brought up, I am art, he screamed, I don't exist without you. And you had a really great observation about the whole idea of the thought, is art really art if no one observes it? You know, if no one gives it a depth of meaning, you know? And so it's interesting because that's how I feel about, I love abstract and surrealistic art. You know, like one of the art pieces I have hanging in my bedroom is actually abstract art where it's like circles and squares and in shades of browns and blues. And it just always feels like that kind of art where it becomes more important when people put their own feelings into the colors, into the shapes, into the spacing. But I thought you had great observations there, Scott. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I love that, guys. Art doesn't exist unless it's shared. And you don't even need to have, it's nothing unless there's an audience, because you don't even need to have the reaction or even the back and forth that we celebrate during these calls, right? Or even on the site in general, but just that art to be out in the world and realize that someone else could have some kind of experience with the art is what's important. Very cool thoughts. I mean, it's Christopher McCandless. Life is nothing unless it's shared. I think it's, yeah, cool. I really like what you guys said there. What I was trying to analyze when I was going through it, I like the repetition, and I like the verb in the second. He said, he wrote, he screamed, he whispered, especially in the third, because the screamed was then reliant upon someone else. And that is when the art had to be experienced by what you guys were just saying, by your whole point. It was screamed. It had to be noticed by someone else. And that's the stanza where it's dependent upon the input of someone else to make it real, I guess. So I'm just expanding on what you guys already said because it was very impactful. Great comments.
Thank you. And I think the poem itself just really made an impact. So great comment there, Jeremy. And I do, as I said, I like the I am. And you know what's also clever about that is, and I just realized this, is
Sam I Am?
Yes. Dr. Seuss's Sam I Am. I went through all our comments reading. That is so freaking awesome, but it would have totally, it almost slipped by me. So very cool there. But yeah, definitely a powerful write. I also really like the stanza, I am as mute as a painting and blind as marble eyes. I only reflect the cracks in the mirror, you know, the reality that art reflects. I thought that was a profound piece of the poem and very well done. And all right, let's see what we have next. It's a surprise. All right, and up next we have Inspired oh gosh, let's see if I can pronounce this. I'll give it a try. All right, inspired extraterrestrially. Oh God, I butchered that. I apologize. Okay, Jeremy, please read that for us and please pronounce that title correctly.
Exterioriality.
Exterioriality. That's where I was. Exterioriality. Inspired Exterioriality by Bill Schiller. No matter if I am jumping from a window nor blinded by rope, even when dumped in a cage, one cannot evade strokes of art. Being within itself offers illustration of a master's heart. Some trophies are best for only collecting dust on a shelf. How must one trust an artist whose every work is a depiction of himself? Irregardless of duration or predictions within a life plan, art, like time, is merely a construct originating from the mind of man. End pull.
Wonderful read there. And I thought this had great flow. You know, I really appreciate Bill Schiller and that he gets inspired for the contest and the way he shares his thoughts through poetry. I also like that he put in his AN. I will still confess my feelings for Taishing do not stray far from my feelings about Machiavelli. Though I appreciate the passion and powers of analysis, I have problems with the execution of perspective. Some might very well say the same about my poetry, so be it. I just love that. And not that that is necessary to make the poem in itself a strong poem, but it's great to read that somebody didn't necessarily agree with the artist, but they still found inspiration. I really like the thought, and some trophies are best for only collecting dust on a shelf. You know, like there's some things we can accomplish in life that we can stand back and we can be proud of and say, yes, that's important. And other times, you know, there's these accomplishments that you wonder why you wasted time in your life on them, because it barely feels like an accomplishment. I really like also the end line where he says, art like time is merely a construct originating from the mind of man. And that is so true. You know, time was invented by mankind. For those who believe in a higher power, you know, I do think there is an art to be found in nature, or if nothing else, an inspiration for art. But for the most part, a lot of concepts of art originated from the minds of man. And so I thought that end line was a particularly intelligent observation and very well done. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like this poem in a lot of ways. And Bill is definitely a very intellectual writer. Those first three lines are very powerful in themselves, just speaking of Sam and stuff. No matter if I jumping from window nor blinded by rope, referring to things that the artist had done, even when dumped in a cage, one can evade strokes of art. Being within itself offers illustration of a master's heart. But then, like you were talking about, Pam, with the some trophies are best for only collecting dust on a shelf, where you do just kind of revel in the idea of something you've accomplished, not something you necessarily carry around with you bragging about it or anything else, but just knowing that that piece of art is something that you've created, and hopefully others will, if they come over to your house, see the trophy that stands on your shelf there. So, yeah, I love his take on it, that he doesn't necessarily agree with the artist, but that, art is in the mind of the beholder. So, you know, realistically, it all just depends on how we choose to see things. Almost anything in the world can be art. So,
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there. And Jeremy, your thoughts.
And I think that's where the beauty of all this lies. And I like that you both pointed it out. And thank you for reading that author's note, Pam, because I wouldn't have paid attention. But to not agree with someone's views, but still love the passion, the heart, the drive behind it, that's the root of understanding. And I think that's how we all can connect. And I could go on a soapbox about how that's even more important these days when everyone's so divided. But that's really the truth. If you're going to be a human, you're going to have that connection, especially through art. That's what's important, to appreciate something else because of its intensity and its drive, not because of necessarily all the icing on the cake that you might not necessarily like the taste of. So, yeah, that's my biggest takeaway with this piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And up next, we have Sleepless in Tapai by Anton Amsterd, 37, and it goes like this. Inspired partly, perhaps, by Yoko Ono, the performance artist out Pollock's Pollock and out De Niro's De Niro, not merely committing his whole body to propel paint to canvas or absorbing a character's very brain waves, Tenching makes his art to the ultimate life. Brain and body together, lay it on the line to replace paint, brush, and canvas, and poem. And I really liked this one. I thought it was so clever. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
I like the note. I'm sorry that I'm laughing, but I like the note that there's this appreciation for Yoko Ono's performances and the fact that there was passion for Yoko Ono, because I was just watching just the other day. It was Bill Barr. What's the comedian's name, guys? Bill. Whatever.
Yeah, I have no.
But anyway, he was making fun of her performance with Yoko Ono just the other day that I was giggling at, about how she was ruining a song with Chuck Berry and John Lennon when they performed on the show. And okay, that's fine. I think that's true to a lot. I might not appreciate that particular thing, but I like the fact that Yoko or even Tenshin is putting it all out there. And it's very much what we just said about the last poem. You don't have to agree with it. It's the spirit, the intensity, the commitment that you have to appreciate. So yeah, no, same kind of thought. Great poem.
Yeah, well, you know, and Yoko just really had one of those voices. There's something about her where I could definitely wish, you know, I would actually like to listen to that comedian and that bit. She definitely, but yeah, I really like that, you know, you brought up how it's all about the appreciating the spirit and the energy. So great observation there. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Jeremy's idea of the commitment of the artist and stuff. I think that's really great. Yeah, I really like this poem. I love the idea of capturing the commitment, life, brain, and body all together, laid on the line. And in this case, like it says in those last two lines, to replace paintbrush and canvas. So, you know, it's, again, just the idea of interpretation of art. But, you know, to him, this was his art. And this was his expression in life. And as intriguing and interesting as it might be, you know, it was his art. And here we are talking about it. So... So anyways, yeah, and I really love the expression Anton has in describing it, the allusions to Yoko Ono and Pollock's Pollock and out De Niro's De Niro and stuff. So very well done overall.
Absolutely. Great comment. I, too, really enjoyed the phrase, the performance art is out Pollock's Pollock and out De Niro's De Niro. not merely committing his whole body to pearl painted canvas, you know. And I really like that where he says he takes in brain and body together, laid on the line to replace paintbrush and canvas. This is a wonderful brevity about how the artist's body and mind became the tool. I also found his AN very interesting, where he mentions that, let's see, where does he say that? In the post-movie version of Awakening, Dr. Oliver Sacks records how De Niro's overwhelming commitment to his art causes his brain waves to replicate those of a Parkinson patient. I felt the Sleepless piece showed the same commitment to art. And so, you know, excellent right there and very well done. Oh, my goodness, I think some perv is sending me videos of him, like, streaking.
No,
Well, there we go. Me. There's more art.
Exactly. Judge me, Pam. Don't you dare judge me for being naked. No, it's the Bill Burr. It's Bill Burr is what I was trying to say. And I sent you the rant link on what I saw the other day.
I kind of figured. I hadn't looked because it would be, you know, I wouldn't be turning on a video and on a show. But I kind of figured, you know what? And I just had a thought. I realized, you know what you can do, Jeremy, is next time Jean goes to hand you a towel, tell her it's performance art. And performance art does not get covered.
I shall not be suppressed.
Yeah, exactly. All right. And I'll go ahead and grab the next one. And, of course, we are going to end up with a few carryovers, and those will either go to Tuesdays after midnight or they will go to the next Break On Through show. So up next we have Water My Water by Cedar Chapman. And, Scott, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Water My Water by Cedar Chapman. Water, oh my water, submerge me in your amniotic world so I may look skyward at the ripples in heaven. Its sun rays and clouds twist and distort like a carnival mirror. Lush leaves fall and float, bobbing up and down, moving nowhere. They're mere extras on the shimmering meniscus movie screen. The world is muted here. Silence welcomes me like an old friend. Angry screams are escorted away. Tears meld and belong. Just bubbles, tiny, tiny bubbles, rising out of my orifices like a seltzer tablet to dissolve and disappear. Acid fills my lungs. It burns like a raging star. I feel its inferno rising. I long to breathe again. My stony mind anchors me deep. I'm afraid to leave this water. Splash. My head pierces above the surface. I gasp for air. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Scott. And Jeremy, your thoughts.
Wow, are my initial thoughts. I mean, obviously we're not talking about water. We're not talking water in the literal sense. And I like how it lets me go beyond that. I mean, as Scott was reading it, I'm trying to assign what it could be. And for lack of better description, my thoughts were liquid about all of it, right? I'm trying to grasp what I'm feeling. I'm moving all over the place to understand exactly where this metaphor of water is taking me and why he's carrying it so deeply in his description, when obviously it feels like there's a conversation of something much more deep going on. I mean, I think the tone of it has a struggle And I also like the fact that it's broken up at the way it's visually. The stanzas are standalone and they have different tones to each one. In the beginning, it's, again, the water is, it's more descriptive on actually the physical sense of it. But if you look at the orientation and the format of the stanza, it's more organic. And then this poem becomes more rigid, and you feel that rigidity build in the poem as the third becomes a very hard, brash description of whatever the water is standing for in all of this. And then all of that is shattered with that standalone splash, which I thought was a cool touch. And then finally you're breaking beyond whatever constraints is bringing you down in this suffocating feel of water, and you're moving beyond in the grass for air in the final. So yeah, it's this multiple stages feeling of angst, I guess, is what I got in all of it. And I like how it's veiled so heavily in the description of water.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I have to agree with that observation there, and that, you know, it's like layered, and that, you know, it goes from one section and another as the process of anxiety. You know, and I do think there is definitely, and I think there's another thing that adds the layeredness to it, is that the water is more than just water. It's something that's very, you know, important to this poem, and to, you know, I think to the existence of this person's life. You know, and so great comment there, Jeremy. And Scott, your thoughts.
I can see where you could go lots of directions with this, as we've talked about with previous poems. And there's definitely a variety of layers within this. But I kind of wonder if this isn't in some sense kind of talking about being born into this world. Water, oh my water, submerge me in your amniotic world. So I may look skyward at the ripples in heaven, its sun rays and clouds twist and distort like a carnival mirror. But then, you know, later, you know, the world is muted here. Silence welcomes me like an old friend. Angry screams are escorted away. Tears meld and belong. And then, you know, just the whole thing. And then finally we come to splash. My head pierces above the surface. So, you know, kind of like being born, I gasp for air and here I am. And, you know, I make it sound so non-poetic in the way I just explained it. But certainly I believe Cedar did an amazing job of writing this. If I'm even slightly close to what his intention was, then I, like I said, I just feel like you did an amazing job of writing it. And I believe that there are various avenues you could take this down. So anyways, I enjoyed the poem quite a bit. And Cedar, I believe you did an amazing job with it.
Oh, I definitely have to agree. And I like that you, I like that you saw the whole idea of being born, because it does work with that, especially it's submerging in your amniotic world. It actually, you know, it almost feels like the whole idea of somebody who wants to go back to the safety of the womb. But, you know, I think you definitely both had wonderful observations. I really like the phrase, they're mere extras on the shimmering meniscus movie screen. That had some wonderful alliteration, plus it was just very thought-provoking, you know, and let's see. It also, another thought that comes to me is almost the idea of someone living in a fishbowl, you know, with just bubbles, tiny, tiny bubbles rising out of my orifice like a seltzer tablet to dissolve and disappear. You know, it feels like that whole idea, and it works well with the artwork of just swimming back and forth in a limited, having a limited point of view. Definitely just some wonderful thought-provoking lines, beautifully written. I like how he mentions the twist and distort like a carnival mirror, lush leaves fall and float, bobbing up and down, moving nowhere. It just, to me, has that feeling of you know, wondering what the purpose in your life is. At least that's the thought that comes to me. So wonderful, right? And very well done. And I'm not going to try to push in another poem. I'm going to leave the rest for carryovers, and I'm going to do my thank yous, my wrapping up, and, of course, mentioning some upcoming shows. So, of course, I'd like to say that I hope Rex is actually feeling all right, and if he isn't feeling all right, that he gets better soon, you know, because he was missed tonight, despite me picking on him. Thank you, Jeremy and Scott, both of you, for being here the whole show. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for all she does in the background. Thank you to all our hosts and hostesses for all they do. Let's see, what else? Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, who is listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. This has been a wonderful show. I have enjoyed myself. Join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Poetry. Fill My Eyes with Poetry. And then, of course, make sure to check out the topic boards and contests put up by all our late night poets, hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And I do want to quickly mention that Intimidus Rex has two contests running that you'll want to check out. One for Sunday, a rhythm and rhyme, Todd Snyder, and one for Tuesdays after midnight, Going Gonzo after midnight, which, has quotes by Hunter S. Thompson for inspiration. And Fill My Eyes is running a Twisted Tuesdays contest titled Winged Myth and Horned Beauty. That's got some wonderful Pegasus and unicorn imagery. I don't know, Jeremy, was there anything you wanted to say?
No, I enjoyed the show, guys. Thanks for the great conversation. This was a particularly fun one, even though we didn't get to enjoy Rex. I really enjoyed what we created tonight. So wonderful, wonderful, wonderful experience.
Absolutely. And you all have a good night.
You too. It was fun crashing the party with you again, Jeremy.
Good night,
Well, good thanks night. For crashing.
Have a good night, you guys.